Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Radio for Your Mind. It is a beautiful, crisp, clear Florida spring day. There is not a cloud in the sky. It is, you can tell spring is here. It doesn't matter where you look today. You know, it seems like a royal wedding has replaced the tragic devastation that has hit the South with the tornadoes. And not to make light of any little princess getting married, this is a truly a woman's dream come true, where an average common person is picked up by the prince to become the princess. I fully understand the romanticism, but let's not make light of over 200 people that have been killed by natural disaster throughout the South, Mississippi, Georgia, up through Alabama. And, man, we just got to keep praying for all these folks. Today, there will be no Radio for Your Mind tonight. Jim and Annette are taking a well-deserved vacation down to Panama City Beach, Florida, to Thunder Beach, one of the most exciting bike rallies in the nation. They raise a lot of funds for charities down there. It's going to be a blast. Today, we're in Howard Schultz's book. Man, and I cannot express how well Joanne Gordon writes with Howard. She put this thing together and did a phenomenal job. Onward, How Starbucks Fought for Its Life Without Losing Its Soul. We're in Chapter 19, Reverence. And this is particularly important that CEOs and top leaders listen to this first very important sentence. Building a great, enduring company requires thoughtfulness, and at times, the courage to make very difficult decisions. It doesn't matter if it's a company or a sales organization, a distribution team, whatever you want to call it. It takes thoughtfulness, and it takes courage. For Starbucks, July of 2008 was a moment when I had to make choices that I had never, in my 26 years at the company, had imagined I would be faced with. 600. That's how many of the stores we ultimately decided to close, three times more than had first been suggested to the board. All told, it represented 8% of the U.S. company-owned and operated retail portfolio. Wow. The amazing thing was 70% of those closures had been open within the 3 years prior, during a time period when they were focused on growth instead of the core mission. It's kind of strange. Even, and this is something that, again, this is the tough part. Building, running, growing any type of organization, I don't care if it's a nonprofit, if it's a social organization, if it's a for-profit, doesn't matter. It takes courage. The evening before we publicly announced the news on June 30th, I considered the repercussions of other Starbucks events. The leaked memo, my return as CEO, closing 7,100 stores for espresso training, the six initiatives that we announced at the annual meeting, all of those paled in comparison to the potential fallout, the gossip, and most significantly, the individual upheaval that 600 permanent store closings and the consensual layoffs, or the consequential layoffs, would induce. Even in the midst of knowing that he had to make a decision that would add value to the bottom line, allow them to protect and save the core of the company, he was worried about the individuals that it would impact. This is the sign of any good leader. Military, civilian, doesn't matter. The interesting thing is, they had slated stores to close, and one of them in Wichita, Kansas, had only been open a month. In Federal Way, Washington, the company had been open for the store had been open for 18 years. They were going to close 57 stores in Texas, 39 in New York. Here's the interesting part. 14% of the stores shuttered would be in California, 10% in Florida, two of the biggest states hit with the real estate crisis. It's amazing. And even Seattle wasn't exempt. Seven stores were shuttered just in their own backyard. they expected to take. This is where the core team knew that it was going to hurt publicly. They were taking a $340 million pre-tax charge. $200 million was an asset write-off, $130 million associated with paying off the leases after they were terminated. That's rough. That's really rough. They'd opened 2,300 locations in 3 years. 70% of them were being shuttered. And here's a sentence that we should all memorize. It should be tattooed where we could see it every day. We thought all we had to do was show up to be successful. You know, I talk a lot about people with egos. People forgot where they came from. Lord knows I've done it myself. The amazing thing is, if you stop and you think, and you get back to the core basics, what can happen to your life? So I think in the long run, that's the important part. Success is not sustainable if it's defined by how big you become. You know, and it just burns my hide. I'll probably talk about this in my evening news report. It's funny how if you're in direct selling, every website you go to says we're going to be the next billion-dollar business. What's it matter? It seems to me what would be most important is that you actually add value to people's lives. See, if you add value to the bottom line, the sky's the limit on where you can go. Howard realized this. He realized it quick enough to come back in and make a change. And here's something that you should all, myself included, we should all think about. There's only one number that matters, and that's the number one. Not like we'd see in coaches, I think. More like we see in a lot of female leaders. In Howard's case, he put it this way: one cup, one customer, one partner, one experience at a time. In my company, I might say one subscription, one subscriber, one consultant, one experience at a time. In Vima, they might say one can, one shot, one customer, one brand partner, one experience at a time. See, when we get it down to the number one, and that one is focused outward, not focused inward. I might create a training around this, actually. This can change your life. This is what success is about. Howard says we had to get back to what mattered most, the number one. See, that's the important part. Howard says this. He says, I shook my head before trying to get an hour or two sleep. I was not proud of our past behavior, but I deeply wanted to be proud of how we all, as a company, acted from this point forward. See, I think that's the key. We can't change our past. Lord knows every now and then I'm sitting at the beach and I think of some really asinine things I've done in 47 years. I think, man, I'm almost 50 freaking years old. I feel like I'm 20s. Sometimes my wife says I act like I'm a kid. There's a lot of things I've done I'm not proud of. It's interesting, as Howard goes on and writes, he says, Starbucks increases number of U.S. company store closures as part of its transformation strategy. This is one of the headlines. They made the announcement at 1:05 p.m., right after the close of Wall Street on July 1st. By 1:15, the phones in our media affairs and investor relations offices were ringing off the hook. Starbucks decided to keep silent and instead said, just go look at our 8K report that we filed with the SEC. And here's the sentence that Howard writes. Our unavoidable silence provided a lot of room for interpretation and the risks were huge. How could we maintain the integrity of our brand and our culture of humanity, I espoused, while we were departing or disrupting so many people's lives. We were committed to transferring as many displaced partners as possible into new roles. This was paramount to our plan and something the leadership team and I had insisted upon. We took solace in the fact that many, 70% of those in the field, could likely remain with the company. That was important. They were closing 70% of the stores they just opened, but they were going to do their best to sustain 70% of the partners that they had. But here was the fun thing that I think every business owner should think about. Second, we would give at least 30 days notice to our people whose position would be lost once a store closed, and an unheard of runaway for mass layoffs, especially in the retail business. They didn't want people just to get laid off. They wanted to be able to give them warning and make sure they kept paid as they were looking for other jobs. This is interesting. Here's something else that you know how Howard's already said through the first 17 chapters he loves doing memos. Here's what he says. I had striven for honesty, trusting our people to honor the realities of the situation, and here's what he wrote. Throughout the history of the company, we've always aspired to put our people first. This makes our decision to close stores more difficult, and at the same time we recognize we must make decisions that will strengthen the U.S. portfolio and enable us to enter fiscal of 2009, focused on enhancing operation efficiency, improve customer satisfaction, ensuring long-term shareholder value for our partners and our customers. By far, this is the most angst-ridden decision we have made in my more than 25 years at Starbucks. But we realize that part of the transforming a company is our ability to look forward while pursuing innovation and reflecting, in many cases, with 20/20 hindsight, on the decisions we made in the past, both good and bad. Your past should not dictate your future, but it should act as a benchmark for what you want to improve as you move forward. It's interesting how many different people said different things. See, in the beginning, Starbucks didn't release which stores would be closed. So people were worried, is it my store? The investor said this might encourage short-term investors, but what about those that are long-term investors? How will they feel? The questions were there. One person even said, hey, it's the first steps admitting that you even have a problem. See, there's all kinds of gossip. Matter of fact, StarbucksGossip.com was running rampant on those days. I remember that. The Christian Science Monitor even jumped in and got involved and said why Starbucks lost its mojo. The piece hypothesized that Starbucks got into trouble because they created a sense of cool for customers by giving Middle America exactly what they thought they wanted. I would say that's wrong. You know, I believe that it gave Middle America a third place. I've seen this happen. I get the same criticism from critics inside the religious community when they say that all churches that have cafes in them are just trying to be chic and look classy and trendy. You know, they call us seekers. They're not real devout theologists. See, everybody wants to be a Christian. It's so freaking easy to just create a blog. I've got, I don't know, a whole blog network out there. I know how easy it is. The hard part, putting forth accurate information, digging below the surface, finding out what is there. And in this case here, it amazed me because I hung on. My good friend Art Jonak, one of the great, great leaders, trainers, coaches, company owners in the direct selling industry, has a philosophy. I call him the best dressed man in direct sales. He laughs at that. But Art believes that you focus on what you want, not where you've come from. You focus on where you're going. You act as if you've already received it. You've already gotten it. And I watched him throughout his life do this. He surrounded himself with people he wanted to be like. He married a beautiful woman based on what he wanted in a wife. And when I was reading this chapter, I was thinking of Art and I was thinking of Starbucks. And I thought, you know, I know a lot of people, myself included, that go into Starbucks, and we don't go in there to be trendy. We went in there because we wanted to be surrounded by like-minded people. I remember going into Starbucks when I was still with Primerica. Well, actually, I was with Primerica, but I started really using it as an office when I was with World Marketing Alliance. I wanted to be in there around other businessmen, businesswomen. I wanted to hear what was going on and how they were doing things. Nowadays, I go into Starbucks because I want to be in there with different dads and moms because I got kids and grandkids. It's amazing as I read through this chapter how much nostalgia came back when I realized how long I've been going to the Starbucks. Hired writes this. He says, Starbucks never encouraged our baristas to be cool, but rather to be friendly and knowledgeable about our coffee and to engage with, laugh with, and reach out to our customers. I've got a Starbucks here in town. We got several on this island. One is out by Sandestin in the Outlet Mall. When I go in there, they don't give me a paper cup anymore. They know that when I come into that store, I'm coming to do some work. I'm coming to relax. I'm going to be a while. And they've gotten to know me pretty well. I get a nice glass coffee cup. Mr. Dooley, let us know if you need a refill. Hey, we've got some fresh pastries tonight. You might want to try this new one over here. Now, yes, I'm a card-carrying member, so that helps. But they got to know me. That's the exciting part of what we're looking at here. See, do your customers, do your team members really know you? This isn't about Starbucks. Remember, this radio show is to help push you to the limits of where you're at and to help you think outside the status quo. Silence isn't always golden. Not knowing your people, trying to isolate yourself, that isn't cool. Listen to what Howard writes here. He says, clearly, we understood the anxiety that would result from not identifying which stores would be scheduled to close. And out of respect, we wanted to inform our partners in person before their store's fate went public, as well as prevent our employees from exiting or lack customer service for the months before the actual store closed. Originally, we'd only planned to announce 50% of the stores, but because of the outcry of people wanting to know, is my Starbucks safe? I mean, people, listen, this is more than just a, this isn't a, just a brand. It really is an experience. It was amazing. So on July 17th, they put the whole list of 600 out. Now this is important because if you want your brand to build, to grow, to go somewhere, here's what happened. Then in an ironic twist, something unusual occurred. After referring to Starbucks as a pricey extravagance, public decision or discussion shifted as our customers and communities around the country pleaded, save our Starbucks. See, the media never seems to get it right. They want to push and push and push for the negative crap. And that's what's so funny about this, because in the middle of the negative crap, what truly happened was people in the community, governors, state senators, mayors, councilmen, and the customers, please save our Starbucks. Emails, letters, phone calls. Listen to what some of them said. From Chino Hills, California, you go to Starbucks to meet friends, bring your kids for some cold drinks on a hot, sunny day, study, work, on the computer, read, or just enjoy some quiet time in a comfortable armchair. This Starbucks has really become a part of our little community, and we want to do what we can to help. Niles, Ohio, please don't close our North Common Starbucks. My wife and I go there every day for our drinks. We know the staff and they know us. They have become our friends. From Indiana, please, please, please do not close Starbucks here in Portage, Indiana on Route 6. This is the best Starbucks we've ever been to. Not only is it clean and the staff, all the staff, is always friendly, but they seem to take pride in the store. We always go to this location. We love everyone who works here. They really go the extra mile, and everyone's happy. Please reconsider. A few lines from a gal in Minnesota. I can't believe that my Starbucks is closing. You never know how important a place is until you're about to lose it. One person wrote to Howard himself, Mr. Schultz, for the past 2 years I've been coming to Starbucks on Phillips Avenue in Jacksonville, Florida. And the staff here has been wonderful. This particular team has been genuinely warm and personable day in and day out. So from my viewpoint, it would certainly consider this store to be a winner for you. So there were more like this, most notably the spontaneous flow spoke to the roles in the community. This is powerful. Across the nation, it was more than just a brand. It became a way of life. Nike's become this way. Apple became this way. Starbucks has become this way. You know, there's many, many others as we look through it that have become this way. People can't live without them. There's others that haven't. You know, for years people thought they could not do without MySpace, and then it disappeared and Facebook is here. Makes you wonder what would be the next. But there's certain things in life that don't change. It's amazing when you look at this. When you see what happens, it's like, wow. See, you want your people to feel that way about you, not just your brand. You want to make sure that it's there, that people see it, that people understand it. Through all of this, Howard saw a silver lining. He says, the pushback from our customers, our people, even the reaction from landlords affirmed that Starbucks was a positive force, a mainstay in many communities. Never before had so many people, inside or outside the company, stood up and so passionately, so spontaneously championed our existence. Daniel Henniger, the deputy editor at the Wall Street Journal, wrote it this way. Would people go this berserk if the local Dunkin' Donuts closed? What is going on here? It can't be about coffee. See, all of a sudden he understood. See, people started to realize, you know what, it isn't about the coffee that's served there. It's about the people. I believe that Starbucks was able to take over the last few decades. And they took the small cafe experience in rural America and they brought it to every major city out there. The stuff that just used to be on Route 66 where you'd make friends up and down the highway. It became commonplace in L.A., Seattle, New York, Boston, Atlanta. Henniger goes on and he writes this. A friend said that Starbucks stores, bitter enders, reminded her of the protest against closing of the neighborhood Catholic churches. True. The stores are like secular chapels. No sign on the wall says that you must be quiet, polite, or contemplative, but people are. Ritual abounds. So too with the refusal to walk two blocks to a nearby Starbucks. Back in the glory days when cities had a church on every 10 blocks, no one would go to a church blocks away with the same service. They wanted their church. Sure, they'd drop into a Catholic or a Presbyterian church anywhere in America, knowing the feeling would always be the same. But it wasn't their store, wasn't their church. He goes on, he says, I don't go to Starbucks that much. I don't even go to a Baptist church either. But I'm glad we've got one on just about every corner. See, folks, this is a cultural shift. And if you want to build your organization, you need it to be that way. Now, you may be saying, Troy, you know, nobody's like this in direct selling. I would beg to differ. Orrin Woodward and Chris Brady, the co-founders of Team International, they created a culture where people were family. And when they decided to walk away from Amway, 50,000 people walked with them. Brig Hart, Donna Johnson, Lisa Jimenez. The list goes on and on. There are people that have created organizations, cultures, passionate cultures that have done the same. To show you how powerful this is, listen to this little story right here. One day at a store in Lakewood Town Center near Tacoma, Washington, an older woman wearing a purple turtleneck raised her hand. "I have a couple of comments," she said. "First and foremost, I have a 16-year-old granddaughter in Madison, Mississippi, and when she knew I was going to see you tonight, she said, 'Grandma, get down on your knees and beg. Don't let him close the Madison store.'" Then the woman stood up, and to a background of applause and supportive laughter from customers, she got down on one knee in front of me. What could I say? I smiled and bowed to look into the Mississippi store, and we did. Tragically, like so many others, it could not sustain itself. My heart was heavy, but my belief that Starbucks was about so much more than coffee had never been stronger. See, that's the key right there. A grandma is willing to get in front and humble herself to say, "Will you please leave a store open for my granddaughter?" My children drink next from Vima. Now, Vima's no Starbucks. BK's would tell you he's no Howard Schultz. But that product has revolutionized children's lives across the world, not just in America. How's your company doing? How's your brand doing? How's your leadership doing? Are you revolutionizing people one person at a time, one experience at a time, right in your own neighborhood? Or have you fallen into the trap of the propaganda that's fluent on the internet, on get rich quick, on doing it this way, on doing it that way? Or are you following your heart, that gut instinct of how to build your business the right way? Folks, have an awesome weekend. Mother's Day's around the corner. It's going to be awesome. Next week, we start in Monday morning, Chapter 20, No Silver Bullets. Live life like it's an epic adventure. I'll see you at the top. Be back Monday morning with us right here on Radio for Your Mind. Bye now.